Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I am so excited to have you back. You know me. I'm your friendly HR dashboard guy, Bruce Marable, CEO of Employee Cycle. And you know us. We try to help you bring all your HR data together from all your different disparate and disconnected HR systems to be able to view, track, and analyze all your great people data in one beautiful real-time HR dashboard. But that's enough about me, because today we have a very interesting guest that's going to discuss a very interesting topic. So without further ado, please help me welcome Leslie Crowe, Chief Product Officer of Trip Actions, to the podcast. And today we're going to talk about why business travel is employee engagement. Leslie, welcome to the podcast.
Woo! Thank you, Bruce. Wow, what an intro. I don't know how I can follow that.
Oh, I'm sure you're going to do fine.
I'll do my best.
All right. So I want to ask you the question that we always want to know when we bring on a guest to the podcast, and that is, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
So like most people who end up in HR, it was not something like I woke up when I was 5 years old and said, I'm going to be in HR when I grow up. It kind of came through a set of really interesting steps. I started my career in sales. And while I loved sales and being a sales manager and an operator, I really felt like there was something missing in terms of the impact that I was having. And I was just lucky enough. I worked at a couple of very high growth companies. So I was at Dropbox and then at MuleSoft. And we, because of that, when we were growing so fast, you end up being able to get your hands in a lot of different things. And so I ended up spending my time on a ton of people-related projects, everything from building a manager development program to figuring out how we actually acquired new grad talent. So anyways, through that, kind of got me in the door. And then, I don't know, it just sticks with you. For the people that end up in this space, it's one of those things that kind of ends up being a calling, and ended up loving the work. Again, not intentional in the beginning, but has been intentional ever since. And lucky enough to find my way to Trip Actions.
Nice. And for all of the listeners out there who don't know or not familiar with Trip Actions, can you just give a brief description of what your company does?
Absolutely. So Trip Actions is a corporate travel platform, the same way that you may be comfortable or understand the concept of, you know, Amex Travel or Concur or one of those other systems, or maybe you book your own travel at your company. Our purpose is to really make the business travel experience seamless and effective, and in many ways, consumer friendly, right? The way that we're all used to booking our personal travel, why can't we have that same kind of experience and arguably an even better experience while we're on the road? So the purpose is, you know, yes, it's a vehicle to get business travel accomplished, but our real goal here is, how do we actually power those in-person connections that we all know can really only happen when you show up and see someone face to face?
Nice. And thanks for that.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
I am dying to go into this topic because I have never heard business travel and employee engagement in the same sentence. And I'm sure a lot of listeners have not. So our topic today is why business travel is employee engagement. So let's just start with that. What does that mean exactly?
Yeah. So, I mean, think about it. Bruce, you travel for work, I'm guessing, right?
I do.
Do you enjoy it?
I do.
Why do you enjoy it?
I enjoy it. Wow, this is the first time anyone's ever asked me a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. I turned it around on you.
No, this is great. This is great. I was caught off guard. I like it because I get to meet new and interesting people. Hopefully, I'm going to a place that's also interesting as well. But my ratio is that if I'm going to a very boring place, then I hope that the people are so interesting that they make up for the foreign place or the cold or the cold place. And I'm just a constant learner. I just like to learn about new places, new things, new people, new industries. I just want to learn as much as possible. And I do actually like having a change of pace and being in different places. different weather, different environment. It's just cool to have that mindset shift to be in a different place and potentially think differently.
Wow. Well, considering to all of the listeners out there, I did not prep you at all for that one or let you know I was going to even ask you a question.
You did not.
You just basically nailed it for me. So, but I think the thing that you said there is really true, right? It is about the people that you're meeting and the, like, the work that you're doing. And it is your, there's so much that can be learned by changing your environment. So all of those things are great, right? So employees in general really love the concept of business travel. They get to see different parts of the world. They get all this energy when they get to meet their coworkers there or go to a conference and learn something or whatever it is, right? So there's so much goodness. But oftentimes when you think about business travel, it's really one of those things that's handled by, I don't know, the finance team, and they're thinking about how do I control the costs and make sure we don't spend too much money. And we're not actually thinking about the user. But when you think about it, your employees are spending so much of their time, both personal and work time, right? Oftentimes work trips will take you out on a Sunday and you're skipping a weekend or a birthday party or something like that, right? But imagine a world where you actually could put your user first, your employee first, and how much better would work travel be for your employees, and how much more would they see it as a perk and a potential engagement tool if your travel program was actually set up to meet their needs. And that's everything from thinking about, like, how do they prefer to travel? Maybe they like using ride sharing services versus having to use a company car or a taxi, whatever it is. You know, how do you actually make a business travel experience that becomes a perk and not just one of those things you have to do because your job says that you have to do it, right? So I think that's why it's funny you said that you hadn't heard these two things in a sentence, and that makes sense because you don't think of your travel program necessarily as being an employee engagement tool. And I think that's really the thing that we're thinking about is how do you reframe that and realize that because companies that have happier and more engaged employees are more successful, why can't this be one of the things that you use to drive your business forward?
That was great. You actually just talked about or just touched on about 8 of my questions that I have.
Great. So where now, do you want to go then?
So now I need to figure out how I'm going to prioritize these. Well, let's start with this one because I'm really interested in, as a tech company, how has technology actually changed not only the perception of travel for employees, but also employers, especially when you have things like Zoom and Skype and so many other ways to actually be able to talk to people without traveling to where they are. Do people still want to travel as much?
Yeah. So it's interesting. I'll hit the end of your question and then kind of go back to the beginning because I think there's two sides. It's you see, and you hit on it. It's the employer side and how are we thinking about things there? And then what about the employee and how does technology affect their perception of business travel? So I think, you know, going to the second part. So video conferencing, right? Amazing tool. I mean, think about the number of how many more meetings and phone calls that we can have that are just much more effective now that we have much better video conferencing technology than we did, you know, 10 years ago, for instance. But in the end, you know, you asked, do employees still want to travel? Yes, they do. So if you we did a survey last year and we found that 90% of employees really see business travel as a benefit of their job, a perk and something that they're excited about. And the reason really comes down to there's only so much that you can do over a computer. Yes, it helps a lot. But in the end, when you're thinking about a relationship that you need to drive forward, whether it's, you know, for sales or, you know, your two coworkers working across continents on a similar project, those relationships can only really be built in person. And video conferencing can help a ton with getting the ball rolling and keeping things moving when you're not always in person. But when it comes down to, hey, we have to make a commitment to each other, whether it's time or money or resources, you can't do that all the time, especially for these bigger sales deals or bigger relationships within work. It doesn't always happen via video conference. So you actually have to show up. So I think it's actually just different ways of operating. And I don't think one is necessarily in competition with the other because they perform two totally different purposes. And I think to your question earlier too on, you know, employees, I actually think a lot of the reason why technology is becoming so important with business travel is because of employees. If you think about the experience that you have. If, you know, you said you travel for work, when you travel over your personal life, you're probably using a bunch of online tools, and you're figuring, you're maybe on your phone, maybe you're, you know, in an Uber somewhere and you're trying to book a ticket and you're comparing prices and you're looking at schedules, and it's so much easier than the way people normally think about business travel. So in many ways, because consumer expectations are so high for the information that they should have at their fingertips and how easily they should be able to do things, that arguably means that the expectations for companies is even higher because they need to match that on the business travel side.
That's interesting. And somewhat related to that, and this is more of a selfish question, I'm actually about to go to an HR conference, which I was telling you about, and I take this boxing class pretty much 5 days a week, and I love it. It's been transformational, right? And I'm thinking now, how am I going to keep up this level of exercise while I'm at this conference, especially as I'm staying in an Airbnb, which clearly does not have a gym. So back to this topic of business travel and employee engagement, with so many people focusing on wellness, whether it's employees and just people in general focusing so much on eating healthy, sleep, all the other things to keep you healthy, and then employers, especially as they're trying to keep health insurance premiums down, how should HR people and companies in general think about keeping their employees healthy while they're on the road?
Yeah, it's such a good question because it's really tough. And, you know, I think about it now too. You know, when I'm traveling for work, you come back, you know, you're wrecked after a week of just working crazy hours and these fancy dinners and, you know, you're doing all these things. And, you know, I'm sitting there going, oh, I missed my Pilates class, because I'm the same way. Like, so you were just talking about your classes. I'm a class person. So as much as even if I had a gym at the hotel, I would maybe use the treadmill because I would force myself to, but it would not be exciting for me. So I get it. And it makes business travel really disruptive when you come back feeling sluggish and like you're out of your routine and everything. So I think there's a couple of things here. So you're right on wellness being a trend. I think, you know, we've seen airlines start to partner with meditation apps, and hotels are offering these, you know, wellness packages to people who come and stay. And I think that's the reason why companies are paying a little bit more attention, is because they also realize that their employees, you know, when they see the time on their road as time as an employee. And so that ties to how they perceive their company culture. So it's actually an opportunity to say, hey, we still put you first as our employees, even when you're on the road. And a lot of companies will do things. I think the simplest answer here is, you know, if you have a gym reimbursement or something like that, allow it to be used when it's on the road. You know, some companies will only let you use that gym reimbursement at the same place every month, but maybe you're on the road and instead of, hey, this month I know I'm traveling a bunch, instead of my gym at home and taking classes at home, I'd actually rather do yoga or Pilates or boot camp or boxing class or whatever it is when I'm on the road, like for you in San Francisco, right? So I think it's allowing that kind of flexibility to people to realize that, hey, you know, it's not necessarily like that I want to go to the same gym every single day because it's right next to the office, and that's the only way I can get value from this, you know, gym benefit that the company offers. What about some type of flexibility where people who are on the road can actually leverage that and enjoy and feel like they're still taking part in their routine even when they're on the road?
Interesting. So in the spirit of talking about how business travel is engagement and you want this engagement experience to be as positive as possible, I'm now thinking about the experience in the process of actually booking the travel and making this happen. So I remember my first job, and I guess first two jobs out of college, when I would travel, whether it was booking Amtrak tickets or paying for food, I would typically have to pay for it out of my own pocket or put it in my own credit card and then get reimbursed. And then the reimbursement wouldn't come back for 2 to 3 months. And then I'd be pissed off. And although this experience was supposed to be great, whether it was for sales or supposed to be some type of learning or professional development experience, I am always thinking, especially as a early employee. I mean, I was 21, 22 at the time. So it's not like I had a bajillion dollars. Like, oh yeah, I'll put this dinner on steak. And
I'll put money, no problem.
Yeah, whatever, dinner on me, drinks on Bruce. Instead, it was like, oh wow, okay, this dinner is $75. And then the next dinner is $75. And breakfast is $50 at a hotel. Jeez. So what are the trends that you're seeing in regards to companies either giving employees company credit cards or some type of business travel card. I don't even know what that looks like for most companies now. And then what do you think the best practice should be?
Yeah. So I think the reason a lot of companies choose to do exactly what you're saying, which I've been there too. I know that feeling. And I imagine most of your listeners do too, where you're, you know, racking up all of these expenses and then it takes you forever to get reimbursed. And you're sitting there going, well, I just gave a no interest loan to my company for 3 months as I waited for this money back. And that's not easy, especially early in your career where that $75 dinner really does make a huge difference in your credit card bill that month. A lot of companies do this because they're really having a tough time controlling, you know, the fraud risk, right? So an employee gets a corporate card and it becomes really easy to make your Amazon purchases on it or something like that. And you're not quite sure what's happening. Was that business related or not? I think there's also a psychological aspect. You hit on it, you know, when you're putting your own card down, it really does make you feel like you're spending your own money, even though you know you'll get reimbursed. And many small companies have this, you know, spend money like it's your own thing, but policy. And so they want people to feel that. All that being said, in the end, going back to what we were talking about earlier, is that really focusing on the user? And so I think in many cases, the answer is no. Maybe some people love racking up, you know, all their credit card points and have, you know, plenty of money and that's fine. But that's not the normal person, right, who's traveling for work. And so I think there's a few things happening here. So one is you do see a trend towards products becoming more available for smaller companies to be able to manage corporate cards better, right? That used to be a big company thing where you'd see really large, you know, multinational corporations with tens of thousands of employees give out corporate cards, and that was the only way that you could get one. Now, you know, today, that's not necessarily the case. And I think that also, too, if you use a travel product that allows you to link it, or if you think about things like, you know, whether it's using an Uber corporate account or Lyft corporate account, or even trip actions you can tie to a company credit card, then at least you're taking the majority of expenses off of your employees' plate. So they're not actually having to shell out all of that money for their flights and their hotels, because those pieces are controlled and managed by the company. So that helps a little bit. But I think in the end, like, what's the right end state here? Like, the right end state is, you know, you should be able to have a corporate card for each employee. And to mitigate the risk that we're talking about here, like, why can't you have it so that, you know, the corporate card works for travel when you're traveling on those days, right? But right now there's no technology integration for them where people know exactly where employees are at every moment. But you really could have technology that could control and mitigate some of that risk of, you know, someone's, you know, buying, you know, laundry detergent on Amazon on a Saturday on your corporate card by just making sure that it's one that only works when they're traveling. So again, it's a technology challenge that no one's solved yet. But I think the end goal is you shouldn't have put your employees at a huge disadvantage because they're traveling. And honestly, in many cases, at many companies, that is the case today.
I didn't think about this until you literally started talking about it. But do you think this is a potential form of bias or discrimination by having employees put these costs on their own card? And so, like you said, for people who may come from an affluent background or they may have a lot more means, it'd be very easy for them to take advantage of as many of these opportunities as possible. Whereas others who may not be having it, living paycheck to paycheck, barely making ends meet, they'll have to think twice about going because they don't even have the money to be able to spend and wait for them to get reimbursed. So how should companies think about that? And are they potentially putting themselves at risk of doing this? Could this be a form of discrimination?
Yeah, so I think it's something definitely to be careful about, right? Which is why what I would say what companies need to do here is be a little bit flexible, right? I understand, especially businesses that are growing really fast may not have infrastructure available to them to get, you know, widespread corporate cards. Although, again, I will argue there are many products out there that are much more easily managed right now for small and medium-sized businesses. But I think the thing is to be flexible, right? Like, how do you, when an employee comes to finance and says, hey, you know, I'm traveling for work all the time and I can't keep putting these bills on my card, is the answer, no, I'm sorry? or, okay, hey, let's work through it together. And maybe we can, even though we don't have company cards across the board, this would be a great reason to make an exception. And I've seen that happen. And I think that's usually the best case scenario if the company isn't in a position yet to do widespread corporate cards. Because I agree with you. I think it's a dangerous path to go down. And no one should be stopped from having to travel for work just because they can't afford to front all of the money up front. And then also make sure you have really good expense software so that people can get reimbursed really fast.
Got it. So we're past the process of actually booking, and now it's time to figure out where you're going to fly, where you're going to stay, how you're going to get around when you're traveling.
Yeah.
Do you see a trend where companies are now allowing more employees to stay in Airbnbs or VRBOs and use Uber more than taxis? Is that something that companies are actually pushing them towards? Are they making the cost benefit analysis and saying this is cheaper than this? What does that look like now for employees to be able to choose from?
Yeah, you hit on a good trend there. And I think the reason why this is even a topic now is a lot of employees are driving this, or continuing to drive this trend around business travel mixing with leisure travel, right? So back in the day, it was like you did one or the other, but now employees are doing are mixing the two together, right? So, hey, you go on a trip for work and maybe you extended it for a little bit longer and you have a little bit of leisure travel. So because of this, like it really comes down to what we were talking about earlier is like, how do you put the user first? And that's where, you know, Lyft and Uber ride sharing and Airbnbs come in. So if you think about them from a user perspective, like you get off of a plane somewhere, maybe you're even traveling internationally for work and you don't speak the language and you don't have the currency in your wallet. Like that would be, it's total ease of use, right? If you can just call an Uber instead, like you don't have to actually figure out how to manage that entire situation. And it's so much easier to expense, right? It comes right, the email receipt comes right into your inbox. And there again, comes back to ease of use. And then same thing with Airbnb. Like a lot of users, a lot of travelers are looking for much more unique travel experiences. They're not necessarily looking for your stereotypical hotel in the business district. They'd rather maybe stay at an Airbnb. You said you were staying at one in San Francisco for your conference. Hey, it feels a little bit more homey. You feel a little bit less like you're breaking your routine. So again, this is all part of a movement of employees just demanding more because they want their consumer or their personal travel experience to really mix with their work travel experience. And companies are responding to that. So yes, we are seeing a trend where this is becoming a thing. And it's not, again, it's not all 100% altruistic. Of course, the user does lead this. But if you think about it from a cost perspective, I don't know if you've ever taken, you know, one of those car service. I worked at a company once where you could only take the car service everywhere. And every time I would sign one of those bills, I was like, are we really paying this for this trip to the airport? This is insane. And so if you think about it, like you can actually win on both sides. You taking, you know, an Uber or a Lyft is oftentimes much, much cheaper than a taxi or a car service. So you really win on both ends because you're spending less money from a company's perspective and your employees are happier and less stressed and worried about the logistics when they're traveling.
So a couple years ago, I read an article, I think it was a management consulting firm that put this out there because a lot of their employees are on that Monday through Thursday travel every week schedule. Yeah. And I can't remember exactly who it was, but basically the article was around employees racking up on loyalty points and frequent flyer miles on the company's dime. And then they were trying to figure out, should that be taxed? Because it could be a form of revenue. Mm-hmm. So if you understand where I'm going with this question, are employers, do they even care about that? Or are they just saying, hey, if we send you on a bunch of trips traveling across the country, you know, 5-10 times a year, and that allows you to get a free trip out of it because you're booking it through your own, good for you? Or are employers looking at that and saying, maybe we should try to bring this travel in-house so that we're actually leveraging the bonus points and miles and everything that we're getting to put towards other trips that we're saving money?
Yeah. So I guess the simple answer is you see both, but honestly more of a trend towards just giving employees the flexibility to use those points however they want. And we can talk about why. So yes, it is, it could be something that a company can, and many companies do take over and own. But if you think about it, this is an easy way for a company to give a perk to their employee for spending all of that time on the road. Also, I think the other thing to consider is points used to be a really big driver for road warriors, and arguably they're still around. And you know, I will be the first to say I value my loyalty a lot to both like United and Marriott. Well, used to be Starwood, Marriott. But the reason for me is less, and I think I'm like a lot of other travelers these days, it's less about the points and more about the experience that I get by being loyal. And I think that's the big trend here, right? Is consumers want great experiences, and they believe that if they're loyal, they may get a better service, or you know, freebies thrown in, or a nicer room, or whatever it is. And so they're trying to get a better experience when they travel. And I think about it again, not that it's all about me, but I'll bring it back to me and my experiences. It's, you know, when I get free extra legroom, my company doesn't pay for that, right? Because I have status, and so I can fly with a few extra inches of legroom when I fly internationally. And that's something that we don't have to pay for as a company, which is great. And then the same thing from, you know, I get early check-in and late checkout. So I actually will save the company money on not having extra days in the room. And so, but again, like it's not always about the points. It's also about the experience. And so I think a lot of companies are really tuning into that. And of course, like it's not, never works where you say, okay, great. Like just loyalty is number one and book whatever. Cause sometimes, you know, loyalty doesn't always work and you will have to fly when things are too expensive, fly another airline or choose another hotel room or hotel brand. But the point is, you know, how do you actually make that experience great? And from that perspective, employers aren't spending their time right now trying to figure out how to optimize that. Again, it's scale. You know, you're a really large company, that may make sense. But right now, this is simply a way, okay, yeah, great. If you can go take a vacation with your family over the summer, and that's because of the points that you spent, you know, every week on the road this year for, that's a great way to really focus, to give your employee a perk that you really didn't need to, quote unquote, pay for.
So as I try to channel the voice and the spirit of all of our HR listeners, I'm sure they're thinking, Leslie, this is great. We're going to let our employees travel. We're going to let them book their own trips and flights and transportation. We may or may not give them a card. They're going to have a great experience. We're going to make sure that they're healthy. But at the end of the day, it all comes down to dollars and cents. So what does this process mm-hmm. look like in regards to putting limits or caps on spending? What are the trends around you can spend X amount of dollars for a meal, or the room shouldn't cost X over X dollar? How do you think about that? Is that a conversation that you have with the CFO first? Can you provide some details around that?
Yeah, totally. Of course. Like it's really nice to say all of these things are so important, and yes, just focus on employee engagement and all these great things, and then it'll all work out. You're absolutely right. In the end, this is like, travel is a huge expense on any company across the world. And so it has to be managed properly. So a lot of the things that we're seeing really come down to giving to CFOs or heads, whoever is managing the travel program, really just trying to understand, have visibility into where they're spending their money, and having technology that allows them to provide some of the flexibility that you're talking about in terms of setting limits, right? Like, hey, this is a normal hotel room in London during those days, and that's the cap. Now, granted, people can always book out of policy for some reason something happens, but you do need, that's the reason why policies or guidelines exist for business travel. But I think a lot of it comes down to how do you actually make sure that your employees understand the trade-offs of their decisions, right? That's something that we focus on a lot here with the Trip Actions product, but it's really about like, how do you allow your employees to make an educated decision? Most employees will not go out there and just try to waste the company's money. But a lot of times they're not necessarily given the information when they're going to travel as to what the trade-offs could be, or how they could maybe pick a better hotel room or a more convenient one at a different chain, even though they're loyal to someone else or whatever it is, and actually save the company money. So I really do think it comes down to visibility on both ends. And that's from the finance side, having visibility into where and how we're spending our money and not just having, you know, this massive travel expense be one line on a spreadsheet, but also visibility from the employee's perspective and giving them the information and the data to actually make an educated decision that is good for them and good for the company.
Nice. And then the last question for this section is, what are some of the business travel trends that you think our listeners should know about or that they should be paying attention to that may impact the way that they're allowing their employees to travel?
Yeah, so I think we touched on a couple of them, but I guess to just put a bow around it, one was just what we were talking about, right? It's the obvious, you know, how do you actually create visibility into how your travel program is working, where you're spending your money, how you're spending your money, and make sure that you're streamlining the technology that you have to enable that kind of visibility and to ensure that your travel experience for the user is the best that it possibly could be. So those are the more obvious ones. And then I think the big one comes back to what we were talking about earlier, right? Companies want to have a direct impact on their culture. Culture is a very important topic for every company around the globe these days in their own way. But I think this is now about changing the framing of how business travel fits into that, right? So if you think about it, like I think it was the Harvard Business Review did a posted a study that said that companies that put their people first are actually, I think it was like four times as profitable now that you can actually, for if their employees are happy, right? So now that we can say, okay, hey, if we have happier employees and we believe that we can make our employees more engaged and happier by traveling or having a better travel program, you actually impact your bottom line. And that's everything from the technology we use, which we talked about, giving them the flexibility to use ride sharing or, you know, Airbnbs, those types, anything in the sharing economy. And all of these things, just really those micro decisions that seem like such policy-based decisions, like do we want people to use Airbnb or not, are actually having a much bigger impact. And so the trend is really about how do we make realize that these decisions are much more impactful to our employees than they were before, and they matter in a much more obvious way as well. And so I think those two are probably the big ones that we're seeing a lot of now. And I think the beauty of it is we covered a lot of the detail around that in the last few questions. So I won't harp on it too much more for your listeners.
Nice. So now we're going to go to my favorite section of the podcast, which is the real, the random, and the ridiculous. So are you ready?
Okay. Yes.
All right.
I'm ready.
The real question, do you like to eat bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
Oh, yes. But that's also because I love all dessert. And I like it made. I actually don't think I've ever made it. But I like fruit in there and I like it to be right out of the oven, like really crispy on top.
I knew we were going to be friends.
Yes.
I knew we were going to be friends. All right.
I passed. Phew.
You did. All right. Great. The random question. Where's the most random place that you've ever had to travel for business?
Greenville, South Carolina.
And why was that random?
I had never been there before. I was from California. It was one of my first business trips for work. And I had to take three flights to get there.
Jeez.
And it was, so in that sense, it felt very random. Again, it's all context. And anything that takes me three flights to get there, it's probably better these days. This was a long time ago. Felt really far away from home.
Got it. Okay. And then the ridiculous question, if you've ever heard of a reason, but what's one of the most ridiculous reasons that you've heard from companies why they don't let their employees travel?
Because you can do it all over video conference. Why do you need to meet someone in person? It's too expensive. And I get it. It's easy, right? We have technology these days and it's really easy to see the two as being interchangeable, right? We love technology, especially in Silicon Valley. Everything's technology. I think it's only ridiculous because it seems like an oxymoron, right? You're like, we love technology. Technology solves all of our problems. You know, why would that not solve this problem too? And in many ways it is solving this problem, just in not the way that is probably the most obvious.
Leslie, you have been an awesome podcast guest. Thank you so much for being on
the Bruce, you have been an awesome podcast host. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. You're making me blush. So where can people find you and Trip Actions online?
Really simple. TripActions.com. And you can find me I'm on LinkedIn because I'm in recruiting. So that would make sense. But you can find me lcrow@TripActions.com. I'd love to hear from you.
Perfect. And we'll definitely put that info in the show notes. So if you like this awesome discussion about business travel and employee engagement, then please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. That will allow us to know that we're doing a good job and providing you with great and awesome content. Also, if you haven't downloaded the Employee Cycle podcast player yet, please make sure you pull out your phone right now and download it and tell all your friends, whether they work in HR or not. I'm sure there's some part of this episode that they'll like. And again, all you HR and people ops leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.